For great-looking t-shirts, hoodies, and sweatshirts, the TNT shop is now open at tntradio.live. Deconstructing psyops, propaganda, and mainstream media BS. You're with Brian McClain, a.k.a. Hesher, on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
That's right. You got a Hesher on the microphone. That's me. It means I'm a metalhead. Welcome to the Brian McClain Show right here on today's News Talk. Big shout out to everybody in the interactive live chat room. Everything is awesome. Red, everybody else hanging out in there. Timothy, great to see you. Thank you for joining us. And if you're listening, you should check out the mobile app because you can access the interactive live chat from the mobile chat. We'd love to have you in the mosh pit over there at tntradio.live. That's the website. Find the link to the mobile app, our calendar, our What's On Events calendar. Always got stuff on it that you should know about. So please visit us at tntradio.live. Joe Biden. Okay, this is an interesting one. Headline here by Anthony Scott. Joe Biden expresses support for Ron DeSantis. Interesting. Governor Ron DeSantis of Florida found himself being celebrated by Joe Biden on Thursday night, halfway through the Republican presidential primary debate hosted by Fox Business and Univision. Joe Biden tweeted out, "Couldn't agree more," to a clip of Ron DeSanctimonious. In the clip, Ron DeSantis took a shot at Trump and stated, "Donald Trump is missing in action tonight. He should be here on this stage." Well, yeah, okay, Ron, but gee, you know, we were looking at your platform earlier this week. It's not bad. It's got some interesting stuff on it. Why not focus more on that than engage in the rancorous RNC talking points? Who is coaching these people up here? Very difficult to see. Trump, however, was not missing in action, but was instead campaigning at an auto parts factory in Michigan to appeal to members of the United Auto Workers Union on strike, which is an interesting move, seeing as the auto workers unions, if I'm correct, and I'm pretty sure I am, mostly donate to the DNC. So, you know, a pretty smart move by Trump there. I was glad to not see him up there with the GOP debate. It was a, well, it was a you-know-what show. We also have former congressman here, Steve Stockman, a former congressman who served two non-consecutive terms from 94 to 96 when he beat the 42-year incumbent chair of the Judiciary Committee, returning to Congress 14 years later for one term between 2010 and 2012. He was persecuted by Jack Smith of the Obama Department of Justice and sentenced to 10 years in prison for nonprofit fundraising where the DOJ said he had committed fraud, even though no donors complained about how their funds were used. Isn't that interesting when you compare that to, I don't know, say the FTX scandal that was very quickly shelved and sunsetted? Trump commuted his sentence on Christmas Day in 2020, and Stockman is one of the few on the political campaign right now who has fought long campaign odds and prevailed. So here's the point, though. Stockman says there are indicators that show the Democrats are preparing to replace Biden as the Democrat candidate in 2024 and are likely to replace with, you may have guessed it, Michelle Obama. So he said, the Gateway Pundit asked, why Michelle Obama? And Stockman said, quote, "The most revealing tell is that the 2024 DNC convention is being held in Chicago. It's not a swing state. It's not a city important to Biden. Why not Pennsylvania or a state the Democrats will need in 24? Because they want a coronation for Michelle. She's got the national name ID. She rings the right bells for their key constituencies. And the rest of the Democrat leadership are octogenarians. They want a third Obama term. Obama is coordinating the Biden administration. Even the Washington Post is admitting all the White House vehicles are going over to Obama's house in D.C. The media has started attacking Biden. And it's not a coincidence. It's a signal that they're going to pressure him to step down," end quote. Well, yeah, we've been covering this for quite a while now. many months, actually, this is still a possibility. And boy, I don't know. Is it a better one or a worse one than Gavin Newsom? I honestly don't think a Newsom presidency would look or feel very much different than a Obama presidency. So I guess we're going to remain on the edge of our seats with that one. I don't like the sound of it, though. Did you know there are many ways you can listen to TNT Radio? Why not stream us direct from our website on your desktop, tablet, or mobile device, or download our app from the App Store? We even stream live on YouTube, Rumble, and Odyssey. We got you covered on TNT Radio.
Making sense of the stories.
They break down the big stories.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Well, speaking of Newsom, here's something that he tweeted. Breaking: California's high-capacity magazine ban was just struck down by Judge Benitez, an extremist right-wing zealot with no regard to human life. Wake up, America. Our gun safety laws will continue to be thrown out by NRA-owned federal judges until we pass a constitutional blah, blah, blah. I'll end his quote right there. That was on his Twitter account. Newsom looking for a con. That's what this is about. Newsom realizes that he is not going to be able to fight the Supreme Court in the long run without a constitutional convention. And when someone like Newsom calls for a con, it should be a red flag, all right? A major red flag, because number one, they're very difficult to call. Number two, if you could call one, you can bet that people like Newsom and people with the Obama administration's fundamental change sort of mindset are going to get in there and destroy our constitutional rights. So what is this with high capacity magazines? I've been asking this for a long, long time. There's really no such thing as a high capacity magazine. And if there is, it certainly is not something that comes with your firearm. Okay. Now, Newsom's least favorite high capacity magazine is probably the standard magazine that comes with an AR-15. But not just that. It's not just the scary AR-15. It's your handgun, too. Newsom does not want you to be able to protect yourself. Democrats do not want you to be able to protect yourself. If you're properly trained with a firearm, you're probably going to have 5 rounds out that barrel to save your life or someone else's before you even have the sights in front of your eye, at least if you've been trained well. Now, that's essentially one bullet in my book. So you've basically got 2 volleys of 5 you can use to save your life in a state like California. And even then, they'll probably send you to jail, depending on maybe your skin pigment. I don't know. It's very difficult to understand. But anyways, Judge Benitez did the right thing. He made a constitutional decision there. And what does Newsom do? He calls him an extremist, a right-wing zealot with no regard to human life. This goes back to what we were talking about with Wayne Allen Root in the previous hour. These are people that are looking in the mirror and seeing these attributes about themselves and then calling their political opponents what they see in the mirror. Because Newsom is the dictionary picture under the definition of left-wing zealot with no regard to human life. Now, there are a couple of other bills here that we need to talk about with regards to Newsom. Yesterday or day before, Gavin Newsom signed into law several anti-rights bills, including the public carry ban, which is SB 2. However, fear not, Firearm Policy Coalition is right there. You can hear it. Do you hear it? Do you hear that? Do you hear that? That is the printer. The printer printing out lawsuits. So no time was wasted. And Carrellero versus Bonta lawsuit challenging SB 2 was filed before the ink was dry on Newsom's signature. So, Californians, what do we do now? Do we wait another 10 years before anything is restored while this is locked up in litigation? Many are saying lawsuits aren't enough to stop this clown. And there's also another one, let's not forget this one, an extra tax on ammunition and firearms. 11% tax, to be precise. Now, during the signing of these bills, Governor Newsom praised the racist Mulford Act and called out Judge Benitez by name, saying people should read last week's Duncan opinion to learn, quote, what we're up against, end quote. Is this not amazing? Reporters questioned where people can legally carry and why the legislature was re-implementing a micro-stamping requirement after a federal court struck it down. And the answers were essentially because we're right and they're wrong. See, this is the problem with the DNC and their cronies. They quite literally will say things like this. They will tell you that that judge is wrong, that Supreme Court justice is wrong, that California judge is wrong, and they're a right-wing zealot and an extremist. Well, the only way that makes sense is if you accept that they hate you, they hate liberty, and if you aren't fighting for it, they're going to take it. But again, thanks to the Firearm Policy Coalition, Gun Owners of America. You know, he mentioned NRA. NRA is practically useless at this point. That is an old talking point. NRA, back judges, blah, blah. No. Sorry. But yes, you can hear the printing presses just over and over and over again. Also, I flagged up this interesting comment by Matt Gaetz. I never know where to call him, Gaetz or Gates, because of the way his name's spelled, but I believe it's Gaetz. I prefer Gaetz because Gaetz makes me think of Bill Gaetz, and that always puts me in a bad mood. But anyway, Matt Gaetz, here's a quote from Matt Gaetz. He was talking about the inflation, the value of the American dollar, and this was an interesting little quip he made. He said, quote, "We are devaluing American money so rapidly that in America today, you can't even bribe Democrat senators with cash alone. You need to bring gold bars to get the job done just so the bribes hold value." You know, that's a zinger right there. And we all know who he's talking about right there. Yes, we do have senators with all of their Gucci suits lined with C-notes. Brand new Peloton bicycles from foreign nationals, from business deals. And, you know, it's pretty amazing. Absolutely amazing. What else do we got going here? Oh, yes. I would be remiss if I did not mention this one. Now, Kevin, forgive me if I say this wrong. I don't know if it's P. Kiley or Kevin Pekiley, but I got this one off of his social media. The Biden administration is rewriting the history of COVID. Today, the head of OSHA claimed, quote, "We didn't demand that anyone be fired," end quote. Despite issuing a worker vaccine mandate for 84 million Americans that was struck down by the Supreme Court. Previously, HHS Secretary Becerra claimed, quote, "We didn't force anyone to do anything," end quote. Despite imposing a toddler mask mandate, and Education Secretary Cardona baldly denied his past support for student vaccine mandates. Just amazing. And I'm really glad that people are pointing this out, because this is exactly what we knew would happen. They want to rewrite history on this. They're relying on the gnat-like memory span of so many Americans. Absolutely insane. Hey, you're listening to the Brian McClain Show on TNT Radio.
You should hear what Hrvoje Morić is talking about.
Unconscionable. Baby boomers are becoming homeless at a rate not seen since the Great Depression. Many baby boomers across the U.S. are now coming to terms with the hard reality that working for your entire adult life is no longer enough to guarantee you'll have a roof over your head in later years. The fact we're seeing elderly homelessness is something that we have not seen since the Great Depression. I saw it when I was in Texas recently. Elderly folks in coffee shops just chilling because they've got nowhere else to go with their belongings as well. This is the neo-feudalism. This is the Great Reset underway neo-feudalism. May the odds be ever in your favor. Yeah. Also, credit card losses are rising at the fastest pace since the Great Financial Crisis. Credit card companies are racking up losses at the fastest pace in almost 30 years outside of the Great Financial Crisis of 2008. According to Goldman Sachs, again, you're seeing all these signs and signals, the homelessness, the neo-feudalism, people not being able to pay their credit cards anymore. On and on it goes.
Hrvoje Morić on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
We've come so far as a nation. We are the envy of the world. And our future is limited only by our belief in each other.
Now we have a choice to make. Do we give in to guilt and division, or do we say no?
No to those who want to divide us.
I've decided to vote no because the voice will divide us.
No to those people who think all Indigenous Australians think the same.
We are not all the same, and there's a lot of us Aboriginal people that are voting no.
No to those who want to change the rule book of the country.
Why let them divide us? Because we are all Australians.
We are one mob.
Come on, Australia. Let's stay united.
Vote no to the voice of division.
Authorised by Matthew Sheehan, Advance Australia.
Well, I want to say this, and I'm going to say it just once.
This is today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
The House Oversight Committee today is holding its first hearing in the impeachment inquiry of Joe Biden, marking an escalation of Republicans' investigative work, even as they fail to produce substantive, that's a hard word for me, evidence of the president's alleged corruption. I don't know if I would agree with that, but, the Democrats counter that Republicans have launched a hyper-partisan fishing expedition meant to defame Biden heading into the next election here. Now, I'm going to be joined by Gerard Felitti, of course, from the lawfareproject.org here. Gerard, what do you think about that? Is this a fishing expedition? I mean, that seems like pretty disingenuous journalism right there.
Well, it's a very easy way to describe and dismiss something that you don't like. Oh, it's a fishing expedition. There's nothing to see here, folks. There's just water and it's calm and there's nothing going on. So that's exactly what the Democrats are putting out, this narrative that there's nothing to see. There's no reason to investigate when, of course, we've been hearing for months now that there are some very shady things that are going on that absolutely require further scrutiny.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. McCarthy said, quote, "This logical next step will give our committees the full power to gather the facts and answers for the American public." Now, he's referring to something like a discovery process, right, where we would then have access to even more of the evidence. I mean, a lot of this evidence is, unfortunately for the Biden family, already out in the public sphere because of the laptop and bank records and recorded conversations, phone calls, text messages. I could go on. But I mean, how important is that? Do you think that will lead to something that would actually go to a hearing?
Well, it's crucially important. And another way to look at this is basically you're expanding the scope of the investigation. You were looking up until now at Hunter Biden. But when you're seeing the names and addresses of family members, including his dad, being involved in some of these documents, any investigator wants to expand the scope. They want to see, well, what do these people know? What do documents in these people's records show? Let's see where all the evidence takes us. So this is more, I wouldn't call it so much a discovery process as I would kind of like a grand jury, if you will. You're looking at evidence, you're seeing what you can find, you've got subpoena power, you're trying to build it to see if there's a case. You're not ready to bring charges. This is not an impeachment. Charges have not been brought, but you are more vigorously investigating where the evidence took you that you already had from Hunter Biden probes. That's where we are. You're expanding the scope because evidence points in that direction.
And what do you think about the Democrats, in the sense that they were certainly happy to run multiple impeachment inquiries against Donald Trump? How do you put that on the scale? Some of those, many people would say, were fishing expeditions or complete distractions based on, you know, falsities that were purchased by his political enemies.
Well, I wouldn't even call those impeachment investigations or impeachments fishing expeditions. I would call them, we don't like what you said or did, so we're just going to impeach you because there's nothing else we can do. We disagree with you, but that's not enough. So we really disagree with you, and we're going to show it by impeaching you. I think the difference here is, and this I think is, we can say this better now after Bob Menendez was indicted. You're looking at the Democrats really show a two-tier system. If it's Donald Trump, if it's Bob Menendez, if it's someone they don't like, we're going to hang him out to dry. Notice that it's the Republicans who are saying with Bob Menendez, let justice play its course. Let's see what happens. You're presumed innocent. The Democrats are saying, oh, he's been charged. He should resign. Trump has been charged. He shouldn't run. Biden's being investigated, presumably to be charged. Why aren't they saying the same thing about him? It's protect Joe Biden at any cost. So that's the hypocrisy that needs to be called out.
So this plays in with the weaponization of the federal government, and we're seeing that almost internationally right now. Just as a quick tangent, look at Russell Brand. I mean, this idea of trial and sentencing, you know, by the media and by social media, essentially is what it looks like. But I guess when you've got political characters, you know, then all of a sudden it moves up to Capitol Hill. But you know, is this not one of the reasons why so many conservatives are saying, hey, I don't care if you like this person, you know, this actor, this rock star, this pundit, this former president, it doesn't matter because you're breaking the process of justice?
Well, you know what, I think the way I would describe it as protecting the integrity of the judicial system has become a conservative value. It's, you know, you're presumed innocent until proven guilty. That's the old way of looking at it. That's what the Constitution says. That's law and order. That's Republican. That's right wing. Whereas left wing is social justice. It's, we want to cancel you. We don't like you. We don't care if it's true or not. We've decided to vote you off the island. We're going to impose consequences without waiting for the facts or for waiting for the justice system to play out. And that's what we've seen more from the left, from the progressive wing of the Democratic Party in the last decade or two. So really, that's the divide. You're seeing people who have more conservative values say we need to uphold, you know, our values, law and order, investigate, let the justice system play out. And then people who are more on the left saying, we don't care about the facts. We just want justice now. It's we will impose the justice that we see fit.
Is there a historical lesson, do you think, that people have not learned, or maybe a hole that has been sort of built into our educational system and our university system with the lack of civics, and all of a sudden over the last decade or so, this injection of social justice and equity, CRT, DEI? Because if we look back, you know, at Stalin or Mao or places that have, you know, fallen to authoritarianism, forget which breed it is, it's very, very noteworthy that people that championed the ideology later on had it turned against them. What do you think, that are there dangers here for just your standard Democrat voter out here in that regard?
Well, I think that the Democratic Party should have seen by now that there's a pattern of being canceled themselves when they no longer appeal to people who are more radical than them or who are more woke than them. Look at Nancy Pelosi. She's not woke enough. She's canceled. Look at Dianne Feinstein. We're going to make comments about her age and cancel her because we no longer think that she's a firebrand. You even look at people like Elizabeth Warren or Bernie Sanders, and they're not far left enough for some, so they're getting canceled. It's the lesson there has not been learned. You keep moving to the left. If not, you get canceled. But going back to your point, I think you're absolutely right. When I was in school, we had government and civics classes. We also had shop class. We had, you know, we used to learn how to work on cars and how to fix things. Even as boys, you know, in elementary school, we learned how to cook. We had home ec. So these are practical skills, but they're also skills about practical life and practical values. We learn what government is today, and not to name names. Last night, I'm watching a debate with a presidential candidate who doesn't understand the law, doesn't understand the Constitution. And I'm sitting there thinking, this is a product of, you know, our failures in education. We've shifted. We're talking about how many genders there are instead of how the government works. I mean, if you don't like the way the government works, you can change it, but at least you need to understand how it works.
Right. You don't change it with a hammer or a sickle, right? That's not the way this is set up to work here. And it seems like this, every time I watch one of these judiciary committees or anything like this, I find it painful. It's quite literally painful. And as an intellectual, I find it painful also to see the level of discourse. I mean, I'm going to take a station headline in a second here, but when we come back, I want to get your take on, is there even a value to something like we saw last night, or is it just complete noise and static and catering to ideologues and people that just don't understand what our government is? You're listening to the Brian McLean Show right here on Today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Now,
I've got good news and bad news.
TNT Radio News.
This is James O'Neill with a check of today's headlines. In a snap poll of Republican viewers, it was determined that former President Donald Trump emerged as the winner of the second Republican debate held on Wednesday night. Interestingly, his victory was attributed to his absence for the event. A leading volcanologist has warned that mass evacuations might be needed in a town close to Naples, which sits on a so-called supervolcano that has been hit by hundreds of small earthquakes in recent weeks.
God, you're amazing. You're a much better listener than my wife. You're always there for me. I think I may be in love.
Where is she?
Well, it's not what it seems. I was talking to...
Who's the tramp I heard you talking to?
That was my Alexa, sweetie.
Well, she sounds like a tramp.
Fall in love with news and talk all over again with your smart device. Just tell it to play.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
The LawfareProject.org is the website for my guest, Gerard Felitti. Gerard, you know, I'm going to change my question based on what our news anchor said there during the break. Do you think Trump won last night in the GOP debate? And any thoughts on what you saw beyond that?
Well, Trump won by not playing. He didn't debase himself by subjecting himself to a raucous crowd of seven other individuals. He was not one more person on the stage. For Donald Trump, for now, that was a smart move. He didn't have to answer attacks. He didn't have to answer questions about what's going on in New York State or with his criminal trials. He didn't have to answer questions about where he stands on abortion and whether that position has changed. So he won by not being there. The problem, though, is he only gets so far with his base. He can win the primary easily with his base, but that doesn't mean that he will win the presidency, because Republicans are not necessarily all sold on him. And to the Republicans who are watching and want to see Donald Trump there, want that, you know, we want to hear from everyone approach, he's not doing himself any favors with them. So while he won the debate, he's doing great in the polls, he's the presumptive nominee, he's not doing himself any favors with a larger voter base, because they do have questions that they want answered.
Yeah, especially after seeing him speak with Megyn Kelly in sort of that more open format, you know, that I think that was the kind of thing that deserves some follow-ups. You know, I'll take my hat off to her for asking him some hard questions, and I would love to see some follow-ups on some of his answers to those questions. What about the factor of the alternative? It seems like this was a dog and pony show set up in sort of a social media / reality TV quick quip back at each other. You know, a lot of just little like pejoratives and insults and really bad dad jokes, Chris Crispy. My goodness, dad jokes are much better than that Donald Duck one. But after what we saw last night, do you think... is there a clear alternative to Donald Trump, or is it down to a few people after that? Do you have any predictions or thoughts there?
Well, I will say that after last night's debate, especially, the one thing that's missing in these debates is the dramatic music that they play as the candidates see which of them gets to grab the microphone and speak. And I keep expecting to hear a voice say, "You are the weakest link, goodbye." I think this is what we need to keep people engaged. We will see. Unfortunately, I don't think anyone is necessarily going to drop out after last night, but some should. I think Mike Pence was in this just to prove that he's not Donald Trump and to distance himself. I think he's done that in two debates. I don't think he needs to be there anymore. I think that Governor Burgum, great guy, but he kind of looked like he got lost on his way to a ribbon cutting and ended up on stage with these other people. I mean, what's he doing there? Who knows? He's done a great job as governor, but he's not making a case of why he should be president. And the same for pretty much every other candidate. They're showcasing their talents. They're getting their 15 minutes and positioning themselves for the next thing. Some of them are strong candidates. I will say Nikki Haley is very impressive. DeSantis continues to be strong. People like Tim Scott, Ramaswamy, I have no comment on. But it's very interesting. People have they're getting their 15 minutes, but at the end of the day, does any of this make a difference? I don't think it is right now.
I'm with you. Ramaswamy, it's like I have some comments, but I don't even know if they're worth putting out at this point. It's like I'm not even sure if his comments are his own. He's definitely, he's a decent strategist, that's for sure, when it comes to dealing in this particular kiddie pool that he's wading around in. But I don't know, too many questions about that checkered history for me to be very interested. And the same kind of goes for all of them, and with regards to Nikki Haley, there were a couple of lies or mistakes made on stage. A couple of those talking points need to be revisited, I think, because what one I could put out is Nikki Haley tried to accuse Ron DeSantis of being anti-fracking. And I did a little bit of looking into that today, and she makes the comment because he was against offshore fracking in his state, which is a completely different thing than being against, natural gas exploration in the United States. So that one, that may need to be revised. What do you think?
Look, this is politics as usual. You're going to accuse your opponent of the worst possible thing based on one little thing he said, or she said, that can be taken out of context. I give her credit for trying to do that, but you're right. I think that she does need to revise that talking point, and they all do. They're basing attacks on misperceptions. They're going more to attack each other, which how does that help them? They're all polling marginal compared to Donald Trump and even against Governor DeSantis. So going after each other instead of, right now they need to be knocking Trump out, not knocking each other out. And so they need to revise their talking points if they want to stay in this. If they're serious about being president, they need to go after the big guy, not Joe Biden, the other big guy, him too. But taking shots at each other, they're just diminishing themselves in the process.
And I mean, does it surprise you that there's not any consensus on the platforms for all these people, or even that the moderators aren't doing, simple things like, hey, raise your hand if you want to see the southern border closed, or hey, raise your hand if you want to see the fentanyl epidemic stop, or I don't know, raise your hand if you don't want to see another $100 billion go to Ukraine where, they've lost almost 500,000 men, soldiers at this point. I mean, what's going on with the RNC and the Republican Party in general that they just seem to have no interest in providing it sort of a cogent platform and then exploring the nuances between one another?
I think there are two things going on. One is, and they're slightly different. One is Fox News, love them, hate them. I don't think they did a good job managing this debate, or quite frankly, the other one. You've got microphones. Have you not learned from the last general election? Cut the microphone. Don't let people just talk over each other, because it's that does you no favors. Who lost the debate last night was Fox, because they had no control over what was going on. It was a free-for-all. And as entertaining as that may be when you're sitting back with a couple of beers and you think you're watching football, if you're looking for an intellectual policy debate, that's not it, and it's upsetting. So that's something that Fox or whoever does debates needs to do better. The other part of it is, I think there is a split within the Republican Party. You still have the older generation, the whatever you want to call them, neoclassical, the Republicans from 10 years ago, who are, you know, the George W. Bushes, the Mitt Romneys, the ones who see things differently than the more nationalistic, fervent, you know, Donald Trump MAGA people. So there is a split within the party into what the policy outline is. And that's a disagreement that is hard to put together as a platform, because when you have half the party saying, yes, we need to be in Ukraine, and you have slightly less than half the platform, but a more vocal portion saying, no, this is idiotic, you can't really have that unity. And when you don't have that unity, you are doing yourself no favors, because you've got the Democratic Party, which it doesn't matter how smart or stupid an idea is, everyone falls in line. And in the Republican Party, you have much more of a difference of opinion. So I think you're right. They're not, you don't have that cohesion. You don't have a clear platform, because there are too many divisions within the party to identify one.
It almost feels like a reality TV sort of, you know, SH, you know what show, when they're all just talking over each other and hurling, you know, pejoratives and quips and stuff like that. I mean, it's there's nothing presidential feeling when you're seeing that. I feel more like I'm watching, I don't know, Big Brother on ABC or something like that. I mean, with a minute left here. How can we fix this going forward? I'm wondering if maybe, you know, a more conversational style of, you know, roundtable or something other than this big, you know, fanfare dog and pony show. Do you have any suggestions for Fox as to how to do this right?
Well, one thing I will say that there is one benefit to this free-for-all is it gives someone an opportunity to show that they're an actual leader. And I think Ron DeSantis came the closest to doing that by telling people, no, we're not writing down names. We're not raising our hands. That's idiotic. When you're able to get through the crowd and make a difference and kind of lead the pack, that is a sign of leadership. And that's not a bad thing to be able to show. But otherwise, I think you need to have more conversational pieces. You need to have set topics. You need to have prearranged, you know, we're going to ask you three questions. No one else can speak at all, because if you have enough debates, you can get away with that. So that's what they should do, is they should have longer segments directed to specific people and not let anyone jump in on any topic.
Absolutely. I think that's good. Fox News, are you listening? I hear you got a new president. You guys need to do better. You need to do better by the American people. TheLawfareProject.org. Gerard Felitti, always a pleasure to speak with you. Thank you for joining us here on the Brian McLean Show at today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Men overheat the globe and the women who love them.
From Washington, D.C., this is the Morano Minute with your host, TNT Radio's Mark Morano.
Hillary Clinton was speaking at the UN Climate Week as part of the Clinton Global Initiative. She had this to say, warning about the effects of climate change on women.
To tackle and end the climate crisis, which most disproportionately affects women and girls.
So you see how that works? Climate change is created by men, which then impacts women disproportionately. But don't worry, the Clinton Global Initiative in New York touted the spending of tens of millions of dollars from the state of California and other globalists to promote, quote, climate action. We all know what climate action is. It's diverting this money into the hands of the global elite so they can continue the lifestyles they've enjoyed while crushing the freedom and lifestyles and energy of the masses, you and I. Reject the Great Reset. This is Mark Morano for the Morano Minute on TNT Radio.
Challenging the consensus and debunking the narrative. This is Viewpoint.
Klaus Schwab has boasted of penetrating government cabinets around the world. He claimed in one interview that more than half of Justin Trudeau's Canadian cabinet are young global leaders of the World Economic Forum. If freedom prevails, the peoples of all nations will reject Klaus Schwab's fourth industrial revolution of surveillance and control and biotechnologies designed to change what it means to be human. We don't have to walk muzzled and compliant straight into a transhumanist hell. As Klaus Schwab himself admits, the new technologies of the fourth industrial revolution could intrude into the hitherto private space of our minds, reading our thoughts and influencing our behavior.
Deconstructing psyops, propaganda, and mainstream media BS. You're with Pesher on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
As we head into this 2024 election cycle, we really need to not, I'm going to do a double negative at you right here. We need to not stop talking about what happened in 2020 and in 2022. My goodness, so many places had very questionable things going on. And Fulton County, Georgia is one of them that has been on our radar here at TNT ever since. Now, what does this mean for the 2024 election, and what can be done about problems that were discovered in the 2020 election? Here to discuss is the co-founder of Voters United for Trusted Election Results in Georgia, which can be found at voterga.org. Garland Favorito, welcome to the show. What do you think about this? Talk to me a little bit about some of the systemic evidence of fraud, errors, and regularities that you've come across with your organization so far.
Well, Brian, I think this, we've only got time for a short interview. That would probably take about a week. In fact, I testified for 3 days at John Eastman's trial about the fraud, errors, and irregularities in the 2020 election. It's just massive. But to sum it up, Georgia is hit by a multifaceted attack, which include bribery and interference through Zuckerbucks. It included a ballot trafficking operation with around the Metro Atlanta area, as well as in Columbus and Savannah. It included electronic vote manipulation in some cases, and particularly in Fulton County. And that's just a warm-up. There was also massive destruction of election records, including video surveillance of drop boxes and the original ballot images of the 2020 election.
Yes, absolutely. We've got a bit of a choppy connection here with you, Garland, but I'm following you. That's quite the list of potential problems right there. I mean, bribery, interference, my goodness, electronic vote manipulation really bothers me as a former cybersecurity person, sir. I mean, that in and of itself should be enough to really raise questions as to whether or not an election should be certified, I would wager.
Well, right. And the nutshell of that, Brian, is that in most any electronic voting system creates digital ballot images that are scanned. You scan your ballot, it creates a digital ballot image. Then the system processes that into a cast vote record, which is tabulated for the results. We found out that the electronic ballot images were electronically altered in Fulton County before they certified the 2020 results. And even now, we believe that there are 17,724 votes in that county for which there are no ballot images. And that's a technical impossibility.
And is that a number that could change the outcome? I mean, at what point are we looking at an outcome having been corrupted?
Well, the law in Georgia is that if the number of votes in doubt exceeds the margin of victory, then it's automatic recount. That 17,724 exceeds the presidential margin which was 11,779. So, and yeah, that's just one example. There's probably 5 or 10 other examples. Fulton County failed to certify nearly all of their in-person voting poll tapes. So therefore, all those votes are in doubt and should not be included in the total. That was 315,000. That's way more, 10 times more than both the presidential election and the U.S. Senate election, in which David Perdue missed a runoff by about 20,000 votes.
Amazing. And I know there's a million more examples of this, but let me sort of get to this question before we go through some more. Would a recount even be possible considering all the things that are missing and deleted and doctored, you know, by the look of it?
Yeah, so to the Secretary of State's credit, he did order a full hand recount of that presidential race. But what we found out was that the recount or the hand count audit was riddled with problems. And it had, for example, in Fulton County, which is the most populous county in Georgia, it accounts for about 10% of the votes. That race right there was enough to change the outcome alone. The discrepancies included a 60% error rate in the batches. So by that, we mean that every batch is about 100 votes. And when the auditors tally them up, they write the tally for that 100 votes on a sheet of paper. And about 60% of the time, we found out that what they wrote on the tally sheet doesn't match the actual ballot images. They were off there. And then we found tally sheets that were falsified. We found 6,000 duplicate reported ballots, 375 duplicate scanned ballots. And it was just massive amount of problems. So the audit could not have verified the original election results.
But that 60% error rate must be very alarming. Obviously, it's alarming to you. It's alarming to me. What are your fellow Georgians saying and doing about this now? I mean, is there what has come of all your work? I know you've worked really hard on this.
Well, everyone is alarmed by it, except for the Secretary of State. He continues to just blow everything we found off. He doesn't even address it; just basically just tries to ignore it and hopes that it will go away. But it's not going away. These problems have been well documented now for over a year or two, and there's no explanation for him. So he's still trying to work his way out of this really difficult situation he's in. But the Georgians are very upset. They want to secure the 2024 election. And there's not enough being done to ensure that we can have a legitimate 2024 election. That's of a concern right now to many, many Georgia voters.
Oh, absolutely. It must be. You know, I've spoken with Gregory Stenstrom and Leah Hoops, who wrote the book Parallel Election, outlining their experience in Pennsylvania. And I'm seeing a lot of parallels here. I'm also seeing a lot of parallels to Maricopa County in Arizona and several other places, actually. Do you see, what do you see in the patterns when you look at everything that you've discovered in Georgia? What similarities and differences are you seeing in other key swing states and counties?
The patterns are the same, as you said. In addition to those states, you could probably throw in Michigan and Wisconsin. They were all operated under the same pattern. Donald Trump clearly winning the election in those five states. Then suddenly we went to bed. They stopped counting in all the states, added more ballots, and we woke up the next morning and they said that Joe Biden was now in the lead and eventually certified him in those states. So it's a common pattern that it defies logic. You know, when you just think about it, what would be the chances of that scenario happening in five of the closest states, all five of them, going through the same exact situation of this come from behind, middle of the night victory for Joe Biden? And just, you know, maybe that could have happened in one state, but five? Come on. We're just asking for too many fairy tales here.
Yeah, I'm afraid so. And so what about the midterm election in 2022? Did you track anything going on in 2022 that also kind of held to these patterns?
We did. We found that in 2022, there was a DeKalb County District 2 commission race, and DeKalb is right outside of Metro Atlanta. In fact, it's part of Atlanta. And in that race, the voting system declared the wrong winners. And they wouldn't have known this except for one of the candidates got zero votes in the precinct where she and her husband lived and voted. So she brought that to their attention. And when she brought it to their attention, they decided to recount the race, machine recount first. That failed. And then they did a full hand count audit, and it found out that this particular candidate was shorted a full 75% of her votes. She had awarded only 1,000 votes. She actually got well over 4,000. And they then had to certify the hand count there because they attempted to run the machine count again and it wouldn't do anything. So scarily, that is the only race that was audited in the May 24, 2022 primary when DeKalb County tried to audit more races to ensure that they were correct. The Secretary of State moved in, threatened them, and tried to prevent them from auditing any more races. No other races were fully audited throughout the state in that election. So that's one example. One more example I'll give you is in Georgia Public Broadcasting, Herschel Walker's results were reported on their Twitter feed of 1,551,000 at 9:59 p.m. 4 minutes later, Herschel Walker had 1,529,000. His vote totals had decreased 21,000 in 4 minutes, while his opponent, Raphael Warnock's vote totals had gone up 3,000 or 4,000 in that same 4 minute time frame, you know, as well as Libertarian candidate Chase Oliver's votes went up about 300. So these are things that have never been fully explained, and they have caused people not to trust the elections. But those are just two examples. There's many more we could talk about.
Yeah, well, you know what? I'm afraid you're going to have to come back and join me again, because I feel like we're seeing patterns that we can't let go. And frankly, I'm not seeing your face on Fox. I'm not seeing your face all over the media like I feel like I should, you know. And that goes for Leah and Greg as well, and the people working in Maricopa County. I mean, all we see is lip service or opposition to this idea. And talk about opposition, my goodness, ask the 1,000 people sitting in the gulag right now. Now, let me ask you this. This is sort of a high-level question, but I want to have a good perspective here. So 30,000-foot view, it seems to me that none of this is possible without a group of people, a group of persons like county recorders, Secretary of State, DA, judges, activist attorneys, even city councils to some extent, county commissioners. There's just too many people that are supposed to be involved in this process to allow this many failures to happen, this many vulnerabilities. Do you think that there could be a coordinated effort amongst groups of people like that, elected officials and appointed officials, not to mention all the IT things going on?
Well, there certainly has been some coordinated effort to cover up the problems, Brian, for sure. But the original problem, let's take, for example, electronic vote manipulation. That can be done by a single individual undetected because in Georgia, the voting system is programmed from a central site at the Secretary of State's office. So they did deliver what we call the election projects to all the counties, and then the counties prep their voting machines with those projects and the files in those projects. So that is subject to what we call in the IT business as a single point of attack. If you can attack the server, the Secretary of State server successfully, then you can download your malware undetected to the counties, and they can distribute it undetected to the voting machines. We believe that happened back in 2017 when the Secretary of State server was found to have been exposed to the internet for virtually anyone in the world to put malware on and have it download undetected. They failed to close that breach, Then when a lawsuit was filed, they wiped the service so no one could tell how much vulnerabilities they had and what type of risk and breaches occurred so that they could mitigate them. So that's about as corrupt as you can get here in Georgia, unfortunately. And in that case, it wouldn't take a conspiracy to do that. It would just take a single individual.
Yeah, and we know exactly how polarizing the Trump years were, and we know exactly what the designs for fundamental change that we're experiencing right now are. Garland Favorito, again, voterga.org is the website. Highly recommend you become a regular there. Bookmark it. And stay tuned to the Brian McClain Show right here on TNT Radio, because we're going to have Garland back on again. Thank you, sir, for everything you're doing and for joining us today.
Thank you, Brian. Good to be with you.
Absolutely, sir. Thank you. This has been the Brian McClain Show. Stay tuned for the Misty Winston Show coming up next. It's going to be a banger, I guarantee it. This is today's News Talk, TNT Radio.